So there's a gentleman right in the second row.
Arthur Atchison, architect. Why don't you guys, this is a question, I'm asking why don't you? Why don't the five or six of you tonight tell us that you have united? That's a question to everybody on that panel now.
In what way, Arthur, united?
A party. Why don't you join yourselves up and form and energize that huge number of people by saying, here's the third party. And look at us, look at the diversity, look at the opportunity to show that you mean inclusion, to show that you mean cohesion. Just get on there and do it. Announce it tomorrow if you like, or announce it after Christmas, but do it.
Actually, we're stuck on a story for tomorrow night, so that'll be good. That would certainly help us out of a hole, Arthur. What about that, guys? 10:35 tomorrow night. Okay.
That's the way to go.
Alan, you got to hold this. You're not allowed to tweet this if it happens, okay? Trevor.
Just to join the two questions up. Why not? If Northern Ireland is remembered by the comment of the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone, why not next May use the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone to run a joint candidate by all the parties sitting in front of me here and put it up to the people of Fermanagh and Tyrone to actually show it's not about the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone. It's actually, we can show that we want a different type of politics to bring out the best of this place that we all live in and share.
So what we're talking about effectively then, what Arthur and Trevor are talking about, is a coming together of the middle ground, I suppose, isn't it, effectively? Danny, is there any possibility of that happening? I mean, one of the things that I know I was talking to people about the other day, I can't remember if I was talking to you or some of your colleagues, was about, it's picking up on Trevor's point, you know, what about a pact between, for example, the SDLP and the Ulster Unionist in certain areas? And if that involves all of the parties, then what about it? Is that a serious point for discussion, debate, or is it not actually even worth talking about?
Thanks very much, Mark. I want to point that over to me. You can hear me okay, yeah?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes. I think whilst it sounds great, Arthur, and I, you know, respect you for putting it forward. In practical terms, I don't think it is practical. I think, because the best example, and I really don't want to intrude on private grief here, but the best example, the most recent example that we've had of an attempt of that nature was NI21. And that's not to be smart or anything like that, but we saw the problems that emerged fairly quickly at the outset of an election campaign, which wasn't terribly beneficial.
It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing, Danny. That's a different point.
Well, it's not really, because what you're asking is to paper over the cracks and simply present ourselves as a political party. But there are remaining. It doesn't matter. I'm not
inclusion. I hear people talking about integration.
Yes.
Integrate. Take a lead. Be statesmanlike. Lead us.
Well,
don't follow your tribe. Lead us.
No, it's
take
not.
Take us forward. Get together.
Yeah, well, I think it is possible to get together without creating artificial structures or,
you
know.
It's not artificial. It's a party.
Well,
party.
Well, there are key differences between Alistair and I.
Bring them together for the good of the people in the public interest.
Well, I'm afraid simplistic stuff like that, Arthur, doesn't work.
Well, it's never going to work unless you guys take a lead. There's six of you sitting there.
No.
Get yourselves together and show the other two that aren't here.
It's perfectly possible, to make progress. It's perfectly possible to go forward on important issues. And the SDLP and the Ulster Unionist can do that and do that. And, you know, and even with alliance around the executive table, we found common cause. So, you know, but I think just to create something and say without thought or serious thought going into positions which are important ultimately to the electorate, and whether we like it or not, we might complain about the electorate and say that they haven't got it right, but they're the only people who vote at the moment, you know. So I think we've got to give more thought as to how we can work together.
Okay, right. So working together but not uniting under one banner is what you're saying, Danny.
Well, with respect,
okay.
I don't see enough common ground on certain key issues that allow us to do that.
Okay.
I see common ground, but I don't see it on
Well, let's rattle around the table quickly on this. Okay, Alistair,
it might shock you, but I agree substantially with Danny Kennedy that artificial unity or a fake unity or a gimmick or a stunt to create something just for a one-day wonder is useless. I mean, the people out there have views. Well, you know, people happen to have views. People happen to vote for Danny Kennedy because he's a unionist. People happen to vote for me because I'm an Irish nationalist. Now, some people may not like that, but that's where I'm coming from. That's what I'm elected from. And I reach out when I go out to the electorate. I'm inclusive. I've worked for a lifetime in this city from a base of reconciliation. I work across people. I respect all sections of society, whatever the creed or the class or anything else. So it can be done. I've worked with Ulster Unionists over 30 years in terms of regeneration, in terms of trying to create jobs, in terms of trying to improve people's lives, whether that was in Laganside or the gasworks or wherever. And I go back to that point I made earlier, that it's on economic things, it's on matters of mutual interest, that people can find something to work together. But you don't create a false, forced coming together, because it will blow apart in the first puff of wind.
Okay. John, you wanted to come in a moment ago.
I don't disagree that much, actually, with Danny or Alistair on that. The problem you get in if you create that, as it is literally, that you couldn't take a stand in anything. Because as soon as you say we're for, and I mean getting onto normal issues, as soon as one person says they're for fracking, you know, you're out the door. I can pick any number of issues. So what you need to get to, and is actually, and our system suits it, that you have more parties, you have independence, you have people negotiating when they get to government. If we had the proper opposition structure, I would love to see the Ulster Unionists as an independent party, the SDLP as an independent party, the Alliance Party as an independent party. I'd love to see people like Stephen Agnew or myself cooperating together as an opposition. I'd love to see the three bigger parties even coordinating what might look like an alternative programme for government. But to bring them together, it's
why would that work, John? Actually, what you've just said is effectively what Arthur's just asked about. What's the difference?
Because what Arthur's talking about is somehow, you know, that we all announce after Christmas that we're in one large party.
But if you can all come together to work effectively as an opposition on those issues, in opposition to the government, you'd have to take a stance on fracking and on all kinds of other issues.
You don't have to take... You could disagree on different issues. You will have a different manifesto that you go to the election. When you form, even for a voluntary coalition government, that will be a negotiated compromise of what is in your manifesto. And that's going to be different than for every party. That will have to be negotiated through. But, I mean, the more a model you would see is what Fine Gael and Labour did in the South. It's more that type of thing, but they're coming. I mean, Danny touched on it, that there's not just, say, the unionist-nationalist divide. Danny, Stephen and I are probably closer, maybe, on economics than say, Alistair's party. You know, you bring in the left-right divide. But I would like to see them cooperating as an opposition and looking like an alternative. Our big trouble in our politics at the minute is that you have no way of changing the government of Northern Ireland.
Join up, you might be an alternative.
Right,
but that's too simplistic.
Okay,
to do it like that.
We are ordinary people.
Maybe Arthur, you need to form another party, and that maybe that maybe.
We have a party each in Northern Ireland.
Well, we are moving in that direction. Right, everybody else wants to come in as well. Stephen, I mean, the Alliance Party is prides itself on being centre ground, middle of the road, cross community.
We are, in some senses, a microcosm of Northern Ireland, and we should have the potential to grow even further. We have had steady growth over the past number of years.
But you're still the smallest of the five main parties.
Yes, at times the fragmentation in the centre ground can be a source of frustration, because unionism and nationalism, while there is a diversity of views within those particular camps, they do come together in much larger, more cohesive political parties rather than having a diversity or a plethora of political parties in the centre. So it is a source of frustration. I mean, three things we can do. I mean, we have run some joint candidates in the past. I would cite the example of John Gilliland in 2004, the European election, where he was backed by Alliance, the Conservative Party, the Workers' Party, and elements of the former Women's Coalition at the time. But even then, the Green Party and others ran a candidate against him. So there was a fear to come together at that particular stance. But it was an experiment with that mixed success. Obviously, he didn't win. I think one of the key things is whether parties in the centre are prepared to transfer to each other. We have the opportunity in PR elections, in every election apart from Westminster. So do people actually transfer beyond voting for their preferred political party? The evidence from last May was actually there wasn't enough transfers between the political centre. And I mean, you mentioned the fact that Clare is not a part of Belfast City Council. Part of the reason in the Botanic Ward, I think, why... centre parties didn't actually elect two councillors was because parties failed to transfer within that broad grouping within each other. There's almost the small differences become magnified and become barriers to transfers. That's a real shame. But potentially you may see here the beginnings of a voluntary coalition government. I agree with John that may well be something we can aspire to. So people do have their differences, but they come together around and negotiate a platform. They maintain those differences, but where they can agree, they implement policy.
Okay, Claire?
Would you join that party?
Would I join it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Would
you? Well, I'm just looking at the table, and just in terms of gender, I would have to put myself forward as leader, being the only woman, right? Okay. I don't know. I'd have to disagree. I don't support electoral pacts. I think it's an anti-democratic step to take. We already see the UUP and DUP making this move in order to restrict electoral choice for the people. We already see Sinn Féin begging the SDLP to do exactly the same. And if you want all the other smaller parties to join up and be one party, then what you're actually doing is restricting choice. And I'm all for supporting the expansion of choice. And as Stephen says, our system of elections gives you, as the electorate, the PR system. So it's you can vote for many people, and I think that's an absolute great power to have, and that's what I would support.
Doesn't
so,
for good government, as we've seen, as we've heard from you all.
Well, the good government is that we've got five parties. We've got five parties who are said exactly the same messages.
But it's not the number of parties, Arthur, that's the problem. It's the system in which those parties are working. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to reform the number of parties. You need to reform, arguably, the system.
I'm sorry, Mark.
Want us to get together.
I'm sorry, Mark.
Share. Get together yourselves and share.
It's not the system. It's the two main parties are not working the system as it was intended. And the system as it was intended, and there was a lot of work went into creating the system so that it would work for everybody and inclusive. And I mean, the remark was made, I think it was Claire made it earlier, there is a big need for civic society to feed in. We're coming out of trauma, we're coming out of a very difficult period in our history, and we needed all of civic society to be mobilised around until we evolved into a normal situation. I can appreciate people's frustrations, but it'll take us a generation getting from where we were at to where we need to get to. And the difficulty is, in that move, we need civic society to be given the space for the ideas, for the participation. The system that was set up is not at fault. The system was good enough for to take us through an interim period. The problem is that it hasn't been worked and it was interfered with at St Andrews, and it was interfered with at Hillsborough, to adjust it, to make it work
right
for the two bigger parties.
Right.
And the result is it has become dysfunctional.
Johnny?
I think, Alistair, though, as you said, it was set up for an interim period, and
yeah.
I don't agree too much with John McAllister, but the
Why would you not agree with John McAllister? You agreed with him long enough, so what's happened? What's changed?
It's not that I don't agree with John McAllister, as he didn't agree with me. And also, it would be remiss of me to say, as a representative of NI21, I would disagree wholeheartedly that NI21 at least failed on principle, because the setting up of a centre-right moderate unionist party and the only person that gets elected is a left-wing Catholic. So I think that's quite good principle-wise for NI21. But so, as I was saying, and as John McAllister said, the way that Storm has been set up for this interim period, produces almost a constant peacekeeping process where we're sort of still working through that thing. We don't have the organisation set up for the future of Northern Ireland. We need to move away from this sort of power sharing sort of thing to a future thing. But going back to what, Arthur, you said about the one big party, I kind of agree again on this idea of a coalition of independents. The issue I think we have against setting that up is that there isn't any clear normal politics in Northern Ireland. There isn't one left-wing party, there isn't one right-wing party. There's elements of both of those economic ideas in both parties. So until you get clear, proper political divide in the left-right sense, it'll be very difficult to achieve that because the argument still comes about of nationalist or unionist.
Okay. In spite of what Arthur thinks, clearly it's not on the table for development tonight. What I do want to do is just briefly before we move on, and I do want to bring other people in, so I don't want to get stuck on this, but I just want to pick up on Trevor's point, which is about Fermanagh South Tyrone specifically. Just Danny and Alistair in particular, is there any possibility of a candidate being found to represent the middle ground, to represent your two parties, as opposed to the Ulster Unionists getting into bed with the DUP and the SDLP either explicitly or implicitly supporting a Sinn Féin stroke nationalist candidate?
Yes, there will be a middle ground candidate from Fermanagh South Tyrone. It will be an SDLP candidate.
Right.
We will be fighting all 18 seats.
Right, okay.
I mean,
fine.
I made that point, Mark.
I know you did. I know you did, but I'm asking if there's any wriggle room to maybe come to work closer with Danny's party, but there isn't.
There's plenty of wriggle
room. So no pacts with Sinn Féin, but no pacts with the Ulster Unionists either.
Sorry, there's plenty of wriggle room to work with Danny's party. Plenty. And there has been over 20 years. And Danny's party and my party were the parties that drove the delivery of a Good Friday Agreement
right. In
impossible circumstances.
And both suffered because
yeah,
of that.
But yeah. I mean, the point is this here. Look, we can have fantasy politics. Somewhere or another we have to grind
the
political reality out of the thing. People make choices, and what people say is different from what people do in the ballot box.
Right.
And that's why the secrecy of the ballot box is something.
I guess you can't have a pact with the SDLP if the SDLP won't have a pact with you. But what's your view on uniting with moderate nationalism as opposed to siding with the DUP for a united unionist candidate?
See, I don't think that a moderate, hopefully also unionist candidate in Fermanagh South Tyrone doesn't lack appeal to moderate nationalism.
Well, if there's an SDLP candidate with respect, a moderate nationalist in Fermanagh South Tyrone will vote for that candidate rather than you, candidate.
But in terms of actually being in a position to win the seat, I think, and to wrestle it off a Sinn Féin abstentionist at Westminster candidate or sitting tenant, then I think there are potential gains there for the entire community.
Right. But the one thing that might do that
yeah.
is a candidate that you two would agree on. But that's the one thing you're not prepared to do.
I think it's unlikely to get
unlikely to. Okay, well, there
Mark,
you go.
I'm sorry, right. Mark. We have to deal with this. This is anti-democratic. What you're saying is that you manipulate the electorate. The electorate have choice. You manipulate
well,
the
no,
electorate.
If it's manipulating, Alistair. I'm not sure if it's manipulating. Where you have first past the post, people make choices.
Yeah.
People stand aside. Your party stood aside in 1981.
We did. Didn't we?
Twice, in April and August.
Yeah, and it was a mistake.
Chose to stand aside.
Mistake.
So like, you've, done it, you know, you've done it before.
Yeah.
Alliance did it in 2001. Anyway, we'll not go there. We did that last week. Who? Right, okay, there's a gentleman in the middle on the neck.
Okay, can I make a point? We're all agreed Assembly's not working. Is that right?
Well,
Danny?
No, I mean, I do say that the structures are not... you know, the structures could be greatly improved. I think it is very unfair to say that the Assembly or the Executive is completely not working. I mean, the stuff that I'm able... I think devolution is better than direct rule. I will always say that.
At any price?
Well, broadly, yes, because you have accountability, democratic accountability to the local population.
Okay.
And I think that's the most important... That's one of the things that's worth fighting for and worth changing, and making sure that we retain it.
Right, I agree.
Seriously, wants to go back to direct
group? Well, look,
I take the point you're saying. Right, it has worked in certain aspects, but there are people not happy with it or not voting. My daughter's in Scotland. She's embarrassed by how bad it is over the budget and everything else. Not your fault, somebody else's fault. Should I not take a pause and start again?
Well, look, we are where we are with this. Some of Alistair's point is correct. When we look at the journey that we've, the distance that we've come, and it's hard always to keep that in mind. But I think it was always going to be like this. Whoever thought that a magic wand after Belfast Agreement in 1998 was going to transform things, I think that was unwise.
Danny, I'm not sure that's right. I mean, actually, I think what people are asking, and the people I meet who come up and talk to me in the street, or I meet up in Stormont, are saying, why is it that our politicians always put party first rather than country first? That's the question.
Sorry,
because at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, the parties always put themselves first.
Well, sorry, Mark.
That's the fact.
Sorry, Mark.
Hold on, Danny. Isn't that right?
I don't agree with that.
Okay, right.
I think if you look at the examples, and the difficulty with looking back is that you get the same moan, if you like, from the Ulster Unionist Party and the SDLP. We did the heavy lifting. We did all that there, and we've been dumped. Look, politics moved on. The government, for whatever reason, thought it was a better idea to have the move the extremes into the centre. The problem with that is it's not... It's a shared out government rather than shared government.
Right. Okay. Let's see what others have to say. But John, you wanted to come in.
Well, do you think
politicians put party before country?
Well, very often, yes.
Right.
I'm not one of them. It's been much easier for me not to, much easier for me to still.
Well,
be
maybe
in
that's the mistake you made.
The unions or something,
John.
But no, because I actually believed when it come to mid Ulster by-election at that time that if you were serious. And you would have to question why they're not doing it again in 2015. But if you were serious about wanting an MP to represent people in Mid-Ulster, the only person that could actually have unseated or stopped Francie Molloy was actually Patsy McGlone of the SDLP. So that's where you would have had to go if that was your intention. But on the specific point about like a devolution break, for example, the one thing I will say, and I agree with Danny on this, and I tell a lot of groups this. I was a six-week-old baby when devolution, when the old Stormont Parliament fell. I was a 35-year-old member of it by the time it came back in a stable form. And does anyone... We think of the horror that went in a large chunk of those years in between. So don't lose sight of what we've done. We've problems with the First Minister telling us the system's dysfunctional, but we can actually change it. You know, I sat at a committee yesterday presenting the stuff around my Assembly and Executive Reform Bill, and most of the parties there were saying, actually, we agree with large chunks of that. We know what doesn't work, and we know how to change it. We just need to get the mechanism to do it. And the reason I'm fired up with enthusiasm about doing a bill is because it makes people either vote for it or against it. When you have something that's just been talked about, they can say, well, that's all very well, or another report, and we can just say that's super, and we'll put it in the shelf behind us. In legislation, you can make different changes to it. You're talking about the Assembly not working? I get amendments passed to the Education Bill on shared education, on community use of schools, that will make an important difference. And that's an independent backbench member, and you can do that. So there are bits of it that you work, but you need a collective government that works as a government.
Right.
And you need people to scrutinise that and to form an alternative.
Okay.
So you and I as an electorate have a choice.
Okay, just quick answers, folks, because there are a lot of hands going up. Stephen, quick.
Well, I agree with some things John has just said. I mean, we have a sense that there's a dominant political narrative of deadlock, of failure, bickering within the executive. And in many respects, that is true, and that is letting Northern Ireland down. But John's made reference to what the Assembly has done, but the Executive itself as a whole has actually made some quite important decisions over the past number of years, which get lost in that crowd. I'm sure Danny would agree with me that as individual ministers, you actually have a surprising amount of autonomy in your own area, provided you work within the ministerial code and the broad framework of the programme for government. I know I've had the opportunity to more or less deliver on the entirety of my agenda. My frustration is potential withdrawal of money over the coming... But it's not the fact that I'm handcuffed and stopped making major changes. I mean, we're put through major reform of apprenticeships, investments in higher education, doubling the number of PhDs, etc.
Stephen, whenever it suits the two big parties, they're going to pull the plug on your department. It's not going to exist anymore.
Three years ago.
Yeah. It's still here. And it hasn't gone away.
No, it hasn't gone away.
The department hasn't gone away. But the plan to get rid of the department hasn't gone away.
Part of a wider discussion on review of the review of departments, and I think I've tuned on the view tomorrow night. Actually, talking about that as well, Mark. So
there, you know more than I know, right? Okay,
that's fine. But
yeah, we are talking about that tomorrow
night. Yes, amongst other things, and it's in the same way. I mean, if you look at for example, health has gone put forward transforming your care, hugely controversial. But it's probably the biggest reform of health we've seen in many years. We've had the biggest reform of education administration. We have seen major changes in terms of justice, in terms of the economy. The best figures from terms of the best Northern Ireland in many years.
I know, but like, you can't agree on education. You couldn't agree on ESA. Can't agree on the 11 plus. Can't agree on welfare reform. Can't agree on flags, parades, the past. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
What I say, Mark, is everything you said is true, and does reflect very poorly on our system of government. But what is often lost is the other side of that. At the same time, a lot has been achieved, and quite frequently by some of the smaller parties on the executive. We've got our heads down, knuckled down, and actually delivered. The same thing applies in the Assembly, where people from the floor have put forward amendments, reshaped bills, and done their day-to-day work as MLAs. That's what devolution is about. I want to fix the big politics, the deadlock around all of that that's letting us down so badly and causing a lot of chaos and uncertainty. That's not to diminish that actually a lot of goodness is happening at the same time.
Okay, can you just, the gentleman who asked the question, do you just want to interject at this point?
I really understand what you're saying, certainly. The bigger picture is, as you said earlier, there's function, so you have to fix it. The carrying on to beliefs, well, that's fine. Basic thing is not correct. Surely it's better to fix it and carry on with it.
Right, okay. A couple of sentences, Alistair, and the other two guests in the middle as well.
We those of us around this table can't take responsibility for the gridlock created by two large parties. It's as simple as that. No, sorry, I am not taking responsibility. What part of no is not understandable? The point is this: we have done our best, we work at it. Basically, decisions are made, and while Stephen is here and Danny is here, quite often the decisions, executive decisions, are made first of all, they're only rubber stamped at the executive proper.
Okay. Do you know, I think the frustration from a lot of people is that it looks like the other parties want to have it both ways. On the one hand, you want to be on the inside, but you're not prepared to take responsibility when things go wrong, and you look like you are propping it up. It's dysfunctional, you say.
No, we're not propping.
But you're actually helping it to be there.
We're not propping it up. We're attempting to make it functional, and we're attempting, and I mean, there are two ministers at the table who are better able to speak than I am on this. I have never been a minister. But the point is, our SDLP minister there is there trying to make it work.
To hold the executive account was the phrase. And what happened when the budget happened? Your minister was the only minister who voted against it. It didn't make a damn bit of difference.
The budget is a bad budget, and we have
doesn't
serious...
Doesn't matter that you think that.
But
that's
sorry, but that's why we're elected there.
If we pull out of the executive, it doesn't bring the executive crashing down.
No.
It puts more power in the hands of the DUP and Sinn Féin.
That's right.
Does it?
It hands over total control.
Or do you coalesce around a programme for opposition to hold them to account for bad decision-making?
But Mark, there is no programme. There is no programme called opposition. The system was designed as a four or five party, depending on the electorate. At the end of the day, the problem... Sorry. At the end of the day, the problem is this. The public speak, and the public make decisions. Those may not be the decisions you would like or I would like, but the public have the right to take those. That's the problem. And the public have voted...
I think the public would like to speak, actually, here.
Right. Okay. Well, let's hear. There are lots of hands. Let's get a sample of opinion, okay? And then we'll put it to the panel. There's a gentleman with a white T-shirt, and there's a gentleman up here and over here. Right.
Okay.
Quick. Let's have some quick comments.
Yeah,
okay?
My name is Pete Ray. I'm a youth worker and a community worker, and also a member of NI21. I just wanted to pick up on the point that quite a few of us have made about having came so far, and almost as if, you know, we're doing an okay job. I suppose that really does frustrate me. And I would say that people are ready. They're ready for change, but they're not inspired enough. And the problem is you're using that as kind of an excuse to say, listen, we've came this far. I think while the DUP and Sinn Féin are guilty of staying in their trenches and feeding sectarian politics, you, in sitting in front of me, are probably guilty of not inspiring us. There's 50% of people who don't vote, Let me tell you, if they voted, they wouldn't be voting for the DUP and Sinn Féin. That's why they're not voting. Yeah. And also, there's a lot of people who are voting for DUP and Sinn Féin and who would love any opportunity to vote for one of you guys. But you're not doing it for us. You're not filling us with confidence. And believe us, we want to be filled with that confidence, but it's not happening.
Okay, all right, thank you. Can I just, there's a gentleman over on the left with, I think it's a purpley type jumper.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Paul Smith. I'm the chief executive of a charity called Public Achievement. And part of my job is to try and inspire young people to get interested in politics. I'm very uninspired by what I've heard tonight. I think this sort of romanticism about the SDLP and the Ulster Unionists when they ran the executive is just that. I think it was just as dysfunctional then as it is now. And I think your parties are propping up a failed system. And you may hand over more power to the DUP and Sinn Féin if you leave the executive, but you at least then give the electorate an alternative when it comes back to an election. And I think if you don't do that, what's going to happen is your parties are going to die out. Less and less people are voting. This is a crisis for us as a society. And politicians are the main reason why people are choosing not to vote. Whenever I'm working with young people, what they're telling me is they reject tribalism. And when they go out to vote, they can't find a good alternative to tribal politics. It's time to move beyond that stuff, guys. Let's move on to something new, for goodness sake, because you're going nowhere with what you have.
Okay, thank you. There's a just bring it across the middle there, gentleman with a terrible colours, burgundy jumper, right? Go.
I'll take burgundy.
Okay.
Paul Braithwaite. I mean, echoing some of the comments that have just been made, I mean, the UUP, the SDLP and Alliance, I suppose, you know, without betraying my voting preferences to any great extent, you've all featured to greater or lesser degrees on my ballot paper at some point. But, I mean, I'd just like to bluntly state that it won't be happening again until you have the courage to get out of this dysfunctional government. How on earth can you present any alternative vision to the electorate from the inside? I mean, that's a statement from me, a voter. You won't be getting any of my votes until you have the courage to get out of the executive and present the Northern Ireland public with some sort of democratic alternative. So persuade me, what is your alternative vision and what are you going to do to put it into practice?
Okay, we'll get some answers in a second or two. There's a lady just down. I will come to you guys in a moment. Just come to this lady here in the second row, please.
Thank you. Jenny Muir. I'm a lecturer and member of the Green Party. And I'm not so concerned in a way about opposition. I think that it would be true to say all the members of the panel are in favour of some kind of opposition, but say it's tricky. I'm getting the message, oh, Lord, give me opposition, but not quite yet, kind of thing. But I do understand there are issues with opposition, but leaving the government is not quite the same as going into a formal opposition. And I want to focus more on leaving the government. And there is a very specific aspect of leaving the government which I want to focus on, and that is the budget. Because one thing a government is meant to do is agree on a budget. And three of the five parties either voted against or abstained on the draft budget. So my question to the parties that are currently in the executive, and my request for comments to the other parties, is when we've had consultation on the budget and when the final budget goes back to the Assembly, and it's agreed, if the parties that are currently in the executive do not endorse that budget, then should they at that point leave the executive? Because what it's actually looking like is that nobody wants to take the first step to go into opposition until the British government tells them that that's what they've got to do.
Right. I'll get specific response to that in a second or two. Thank you. There are two gentlemen at the very back with hands up. And there's a gentleman over on the left as well at the front. He's had his hand up for a while. And lady. Okay, right.
My name's Bernard Conlon. I think the government here has been, it's been a worthwhile experiment, but I do actually, I'm somebody who lived abroad for quite a long time and come back here and have a slightly kind of exterior perspective. I'm reminded of what John Lennon said, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, and I think our experiment in government has been busy making other plans while external events are actually going to determine the future of this region. And by external events, and I wonder what your views, I want to get some feedback from the panel on external events like, such as the subvention shrinkage factor, which is forestalling what this government can do, because Westminster decides how much money each department here gets, and that is only on a downward spiral. It's not going to expand. The possibility that Britain, the UK, may in 2017 be leaving the European Union, and also the outworkings of the Scottish factor. I mean, we see a massive expansion of the Scottish Nationalist Party and just a wrenching up of a major constitutional question in the rest of the United Kingdom. So I think the future of this region will be determined by events beyond our control, and I wonder what your perception and reaction to that is. And I do welcome the very reasonable points and perceptions that have been viewed here, but I think the external factor is one that we're not always overly aware of, and I'd like to get some feedback on that.
Okay, right. Can we just pause at this stage and try to get some answers and do my best to get as many of you included as possible and get as many helpful comments from the platform as possible. So thank you for your brevity and for your focus out there. Can I ask for the same brevity and focus up here? There were a couple of points. I know you were all making notes as well. So, you know, leaving the government, it's the process of consultation. If you don't like the budget, are you going to stay in or are you going to leave it? And what about those external factors which are bringing pressure to bear on the politics of Northern Ireland? But Claire, let me go to you first of all, because we haven't heard from you for a moment or two.
I think in terms of the budget, I remember asking the Assembly, I think it was in 2012, 2013, how much money comes into Northern Ireland, and they couldn't answer me. And I think that's a big problem as well. If we don't know how much is coming in, how could we divvy it up properly? Yes, we get the block grant from Westminster, but there's other money there as well, and it needs to be a central pot for needs of society, and that's how the budget should be worked out. What we have is a system where ministers who have these big departmental budgets don't actually have to work together, they don't actually have to join up plans, they don't have to forward think together, they don't have to future-proof together. So those decisions coming forward are not even going to be sustainable, and I think that's the big problem too, and I think that's where the dysfunction really lies within Stormont at the minute. So I know that we in the Green Party are really pushing for a more joined-up ministerial approach, and I think it's absolutely vital when we're talking about the budgets. In terms of, what was the other one? Sorry.
Well, the other thing was just about external factors. Well, there were a lot of issues there, but I mean, there were the external pressures that are being brought to bear and lessons from elsewhere.
I think, well, in particular with the Scottish referendum, I think it's absolutely energised and showing us that there is other possibilities, but it's not coming from politics, it's coming from society. This is people demanding changes. This is people having conversations among themselves. And again, that's not what we're seeing in Northern Ireland. And I'd also like to throw the question back out too, because I'd be really, really interested to hear what your solutions are. You know, I'm hearing about the young people don't have people parties to vote for, that they're disenfranchised, you know, that NI21 member, you know, that you're begging for somebody else to vote for and stuff as well. I joined the Green Party because I want to expand that representation, because I think that we do have the opportunity to have these new ideas. And if we allow the non-expansion of choice to keep continuing, what you're going to have is the same parties having the same conversations. So I would like to see a lot more people getting involved in those decision makings, whether it be through public life or through active politics, is entirely your own decision. But I don't think that you should sit back and just keep criticising. I did it for a long time myself. I welcome people to get an awful lot more involved too. And I think what happened in Scotland shows the power of what happens when people do take up that active mantle for themselves.
Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the budget, it would be remiss of me not to mention, I mean, the UN Convention for the Rights of People with Disabilities has stated that a welfare reform adversely affects people with disabilities in Northern Ireland more than any other region. We are worse off from it. So, you know, it is a bad thing. And you know, with regards to opposition, you're right in what they say. No one wants to make that first step. And it is something that it needs to be done. I mean, I think the conversation across the table is a perfect advertisement of why we need an opposition. You know, we need people that are invested in criticising what the executive does, because it doesn't seem to be coming from within it. With regards to the external factors, again, it's a really, really good point. If that block grant disappears, Northern Ireland just cannot stand on. So it's sort of connected, I think, to an identity for Northern Ireland. And your question about the SNP, you know, the reason I feel it almost wouldn't exist here, there's not enough of a Northern Irish identity. We don't have enough pride, and therefore, and that's because we have no economy. We only get our money from the block grant. Without it, we wouldn't exist. So it's almost circular in that sense. We need to develop this sort of pride in what we have here. And then again with the EU as well, I think other parties haven't considered, you know, with regards to the UK, whether or not they get less out of the EU than they pay in. Northern Ireland in particular gets a lot of funding and a lot of benefit from the EU. So it's a worrying situation, as I would describe it, is that referendum in England, because it's not like we're going to have much of an input, almost, if that referendum comes to be, if we can stop it either way.
Right. Danny, hit a few targets for us here, please.
OK. Block grant is in and around 10 million.
Billion.
Sorry, billion.
Departmental budget is talking now.
So, there is something that I have to say in all charity, that we do need to live within our means as well. And in Northern Ireland, we've been particularly good at, and yes, there have been well-rehearsed reasons for special case and all of that, but increasingly, certainly in UK terms, that special case argument no longer has the same resonance at Westminster. And so therefore, when we make decisions to, you know, protect certain services or defer charges on a range of things or reduce charges on a range of things, then we got to know that all of that comes out of the block grant. And the block grant is what we're given. Yes, there is an issue that it's been flatlined over the last 4 years, and certainly happy to engage with Westminster on that basis. But I do think we have to be a little bit more realistic in what is affordable, and making the difficult choices to prioritise what's really important to us. And look, opposition politics, I spent the best part of 25 years in local government at a time when Northern Ireland didn't have its own devolved administration. And it was the easiest and most comfortable thing, because you were able to blame direct rule and other, you know, London ministers coming in and out infrequently and all of that there. And acres, I was able to produce acres of press releases complaining about that. Now I'm in government. Now I'm a minister with responsibility, direct responsibility for a major government department in Northern Ireland. And I have the difficult decisions to make. I have to cancel external contractors because I haven't enough money to keep street lighting operating in the way that it should.
And Danny, are you happy? I'm not being facetious and I'm not being flippant, but do we just have to accept that now then, that we actually can't afford to replace streetlights that go out? We just have to accept that that's okay, well, is it, in 2014?
No, well, there is an issue that those cuts presented to me in the middle of a financial year to do something, to sort out, to further make savings in a budget that's already been planned and earmarked, and to ask me to do that mid-year, that's bad planning.
Right. What about the TransLink cost there? That was 20 million, you thought, and then all of a sudden, whenever you checked it out, it was 40 million.
But, Mark, there's no money spent on that yet. The problem with that is it was a wrong estimate of the cost of that project. It turns out that work would always have cost almost 40 million.
Right. Yeah.
The difficulty is that we thought initially.
It doesn't instill great confidence,
does it? And that's why I've been particularly hard, and I haven't been spurring at all on TransLink, etc., and all of that. But these are some of the difficult challenges that I, as a minister, have to face. Stephen Farrell, likewise, in terms of the impact on training and skills. And I'm a former Dell minister for about 6 months, and the impact on our universities. And so, and against that, how do I compete when people come onto our radio airwaves and say we need cancer tablets.
Yeah, it's difficult, and again, I don't want to hog this, but it's about optics and it's about perception.
Yeah.
And you make difficult choices, and none of us are ministers, and we don't have to make those difficult choices. We haven't put ourselves forward to do that. It's very easy to criticise. I understand that, but at the same time, I think people wonder. I find it hard to take when ministers say you're going to have to do with less, you're going to have to make more of less, you're going to have to do without your streetlights being fixed. And then they see a programme like last night's Spotlight, in which they see nobody here, and actually not the parties represented here either, they see politicians who look like, again, they are looking after themselves first and foremost, and the public purse second. Can you see the disconnect there? Can you see how people get very frustrated and annoyed?
Yes, I can see it, and I can see the frustrations, and I share the frustrations. But I think there is a difference in trying to govern responsibly, and other controversies about how politicians behave or whatever. Ultimately, the electorate will have their view on politicians. I think government is different, and I think decisions that are made in government are tough and challenging, and I don't think it's going to be any different.
Okay, all right, Alistair, quick word on this.
Well, I think we're faced with a difficult time financially ahead, and I think tight as the subvention is 9.7 or something, close to 10, and there's some other bits and pieces of money that come directly. So, that will be squeezed over the next number of years. So it's going to get tighter.
Right.
Now, the point is, Danny has made a point I want to pick up on, because, he has made the point very well that there's a demand. We're not able here to provide people with a terminal illness or a potentially terminal illness, we're not able to provide them with the appropriate medicines. That's a difficulty. There are something like 41 or 47 different medications that are available to cancer patients in Britain that are not available here.
Well, we could do it if we went for the scheme that's on the table that we've chosen not to take up at the moment.
What scheme's that?
Well, your party spokesman on health, Fergal, discussed it on our coverage of the conference on Saturday in great detail. Yeah. He's obviously across the breach. The drug companies have put a plan on the table where they will actually underwrite the cost of the drugs. Yeah. Well, but our health minister has decided not to go down that road at the moment. Party supports that.
I think we should be. That's the point now. You're making my point for me. Thank you. But I want to move on just the broader. That's an example of some of the issues within the budget that are of concern.
Yeah.
And the priorities need to be, and in my opinion, it's difficult. There needs to be greater consultation. And I'm not saying just for me, I'm saying for people broadly. People need to have more of a say. That's where the Civic Forum comes in. That's where Civic Society comes in. That people need to have more insight and more involvement.
Right.
But I want
very quickly, I want you to answer, actually, I think it was Jenny's question. Jenny's question, which was, if your minister has voted against the budget, right? When the budget comes back, if it's not changed, are you going to pull out of the executive because you can't support the budget? Or will you just say again, we don't like the budget, we don't support the budget, but stay there? Is that your question, Jenny? Yeah.
We'll pull out of the executive when we feel we can do no more good. At the moment, we feel...
And your party deputy leader thinks that time has come.
Well, that's you go talk to my deputy leader. I'm telling you that the party will move when it feels it's in the public interest. At this stage, we feel there still needs to be plans made that marching out of the executive on a huff or a sulk is not the way to do it.
Right.
There needs to be a
plan. Are we nearly there? Are we nearly at that point?
There needs to be a plan for it. Well, I haven't seen any sign of a plan or a space to be created there. But the point is, we need to be responsible, we need to be constructive, we need to do the best thing. Walking out into the wilderness, into a sort of an abstentionist, or pulling out of the executive, abstaining from involvement there, and walking away from our responsibility.
Okay.
But I want to come back to another point.
Right. Briefly,
external
please.
Factors. External factors were raised. And external factors are going to affect us massively. And there are two external factors. One is the question of whether Britain remains in Europe. And the second question is the whole knock-on effect of the Scottish referendum. That's having a massive effect, and the union, as it has been known and up for probably a couple of centuries, is changing and will change. And the Scottish, Britain has to face up to their responsibility to renegotiate almost a new contract or a new deal with Scotland. Because if they don't, piling insults on Alex Salmond, or piling insults on the Scottish Nationalists, in fact, in recent times, has only added to the alienation.
Okay.
But that's all churning out there. You're going to have an unstable government at Westminster. You have the UKIP moving around, but the Scottish Nationalists are obviously, as a result of the referendum, going to greatly increase their number of seats. So there's going to be a very volatile politics in Britain as a whole.
Okay.
Never mind.
Right.